Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Commitment to Courage, the show that inspires you to choose a life of victory. Call in at 347-637-2274. Now here is your host, the woman you've been hearing about, Pauline Victoria.
Welcome to Commitment to Courage. I am your host, Pauline Victoria, and today we are in for such a treat. I am privileged and honored to have an amazing businessman and mentor on the line. His name is Alex Mondozian. Alex Mondozian has generated over $233 million in sales for his clients and partners utilizing electronic marketing media such as the radio, TV, teleseminars, the internet, and social media marketing since 1991. Alex has personally consulted Dale Carnegie Training Centers, New York University, Learning Annex, Nightingale Conant, Infusionsoft, The Strategic Coach, Walmart, and thought leaders such as Brian Tracy, Harvey McKay, Lisa Nichols, Harv Eker, Les Brown, Keith Cunningham, Ken Blanchard, Jack Canfield, and many, many others. Alex is the CEO of Heritage House Media, which is a boutique electronic marketing and publishing company that repurposes written and spoken word content for worldwide distribution, and he lives in the San Francisco Bay Area with his wife, Amy, and his two children, Gabriel and Brianna. I am so excited to be able to interview Alex Mondozian today. He and I met back in December at CEO Space where he was super teaching, and he and I got an opportunity to speak for about 15 minutes during this chaotic trade show where there was a lot going on, and yet in that 15-minute window when we spoke, it was like it was just him and I, and that's the power that Alex Mondozian has. He not only is extremely successful with the technical skills of how to train people in teleseminars, the internet, and social media marketing, but he also is a thought leader. I am so inspired by Alex Mondozian and what he brings to the table, because what he does is so amazing with how he combines life stories and philosophies with technical teachings. There are a lot of teachers out there that will go and teach you all the technical skills needed to be successful. They will give you the step-by-step process. And what Alex does is he takes those steps and he gives you those steps, but he also brings in his own life stories and his universal principles brings them to and combines those to really help people learn what it is that they need to learn to be successful. So, Alex, are you there?
I am here.
Hi, Alex. Thank you so much for coming. I really appreciate you being here with me today. And I let our listeners know a little bit about who you are and how we met back in December and how it was an amazing opportunity, because even though it was in the middle of a trade show and it was chaotic when we spoke, it really felt like it was just the two of us, and that's the power that you have and you bring to everything that you do.
Well, that's the power you have. The universe was created in chaos, so kind of like two planetary meetings, you know, in space somewhere.
Yes, yes, and I'm very grateful for that Big Bang.
I am too.
I had just read something that Bob Proctor wrote, and he said, very few people are going after what they truly want in life. Most people settle for what they think they can get. and I know you're extremely successful with what you've done. And I wanted to find out what it is that you truly want and what has pushed you to take that leap of faith, because from what I see, you are going after what you truly want.
Well, the definition of happiness, in the way I've learned it over the years and what I've experienced, is what I really want for myself, for my family, for my friends, for my colleagues, and that is not only getting what I want, which means I need to know what I want, but it's also to want what I have. And it's the second piece that eludes a lot of people, and they don't seem to hit the mark. And I think Bob, you know, whom I know very well, he's a dear friend, I think that's what he's referring to, is even if people get what they want, many times they don't want what they have. And familiarity, in many cases, can breed a level of contempt. People, you know, it's like buying a new box of Crayola crayons. I remember as a kid, I used to get the box of 64, and they have all those different colors. And after I used, you know, the crayon once, a particular color, I just kind of smash it back into the box and, you know, not use it again. It just was insane. But that's how people live their life. They use the crayon once, and then once it's kind of dull, even though it can draw, they don't use it again. So I think the reason why there are a lot of people who aren't going after what they deserve and what they could be their, what could be their birthright, is because they don't want what they have once they get it.
Got it. So I know you came from a different beginning, and I talked a little bit about how you've generated over $233 million in sales and profits since 1991. But can you tell the listeners a little bit more about how you got here and what it took for you to take that leap of faith?
Well, it wasn't a leap of faith initially. When you're in something, you're just doing it. At least in my experience, I'm just doing it. I'm hoping it's gonna work out, and at the end of the day, I'll have enough money to eat. And so I was in survival mode. And the way it began for me was, I was an athlete going back to my years in high school and college, and I was a professional cyclist, a bicyclist, and it got me into doing professional triathlons as well. One of the races happened to be in Hawaii. Wasn't the full-scale triathlon. I was more of a sprinter. But that level of, you know, vigilance of wanting and almost being driven or needing to win brought me to a point where, after I graduated college from the University of California at Irvine, I'd waited tables and I made a little money here and there. My parents mostly sponsored my college. The decision I made was to open up a franchise, because then I could have the highest level of success without risking everything. Well, how wrong I was. I opened up Polar Frozen Yogurt and Bakery, which was a franchise in Southern California. I had a flagship store, supposedly, in Long Beach, and $242,000, most of it was not mine. You know, it was given to me, gifted to me, as well as everything I had was basically in an abyss, just a hole, 18 months later, and I was watching my equipment being sold, which wasn't old equipment. It was being sold for about 17 cents on the dollar, and I was watching it from the other side of the counter. So I lost my business. My employees, of course, didn't have jobs, and I just felt like a failure. So what I did is I went to, the only thing I would do is, go back, and I needed a roof of my head, over my head. And then on my way home from Long Beach to Pasadena, where my mom lived, and still does, I decided to stay on a park bench, and the park was MacArthur Park in Los Angeles. Wasn't even on the way. I just knew about the park because it was friendly and comfortable, and I wish it were snowing and brutally cold, but it wasn't, you know, to make it more dramatic. But I slept on that couch for 2 weeks. I'm on that bench for 2 weeks. You know, it was kind of my couch, and I learned a lot by, you know, sitting there and watching. In one case, this woman was feeding pigeons, and I noticed that if she moved too strikingly at the pigeons, they'd fly away. And if she was too passive, they would move towards her, but they wouldn't feed from her hand. And then eventually, as she delivered and created trust, and they created a dance among them where they trusted her, she became known as the Pigeon Lady because she went through that process. And I want to do the same thing. My goal, from what I learned from that story, and I didn't think of that metaphor when I was sitting on the bench, just was interesting to watch this lady feed pigeons, which is a true story. But what I didn't realize that it would be a central theme for my business life is lead from behind, engage and enroll. Don't just command and control like a lot of leaders do. Ask questions using the Socratic method. I call it the ask methodology. And give your market what they tell you they want, not what you think they need. And, you know, there's about a decade between sitting on the bench and getting back on my feet. I wish I could tell you it happened immediately, but it didn't. It very, very slowly. My mom had put up her house as collateral, and her house never went into foreclosure, even though, you know, proceedings were beginning. So it was rough, but it was a very clear and powerful lesson. And it's one I don't want to learn again. So I've
there done that.
Yeah, I've been there, done that. I've accumulated a very good net worth. I mean, in my family, I'm the wealthiest family member. So I didn't really have role models. And it's not just the wealth that's important. In fact, that's not even important. That just, you know, gives some sense of security. So I don't have to think about what I have to do next to eat, you know, for my family. Building the house that we're in right now, we built a house here in Marin County and 4 years ago, and it's a great big house, and it's great. We have, you know, friends, colleagues over. I have students come over, and they, you know, they sleep over and when they want to do a shadow day with me, where they just kind of follow me around for a full day and, you know, pay me for it. So there's a lot of neat things that have been created ever since, but the biggest lesson was getting into a business I knew nothing about, and then learning from the heavyset woman in MacArthur Park how to dance with the pigeons. And the, you know, pigeons are, you know, they're kind of like prospects in a way. You know, pigeons are a lot smarter many times than prospects and more consistent. But you know, you got to be able to dance with them, and it takes time to develop that trust. And if you're overly impatient, you will lose them, and they may never have lifetime value as a client or a customer.
So one of the things that you teach people is to how to foster relationships and how to develop that trust. So then your prospects become lifelong clients.
They're trained in a way. You know, the way they're immersed and the way they come in, they're trained to engage and to interact, which I didn't think about it before. Wow, what a great long-term strategy, because most of my traffic and most of my business comes from referrals. When people go to tell700secrets.com, it's not because I'm referring it. Like, you can go there and see there's a $2,500 course that's available to you, that's available on an evergreen basis. But people go there because of word of mouth, and they end up paying the $2,500. And, you know, there's payment plans available, but nevertheless, I learned that process through the ability to prevent myself from taking shortcuts. Because if I take shortcuts, then I can't dance with the pigeons, and I want them to eat from the palm of my hand. I can't do that unless we go back and forth, back and forth. It's just a courting of sorts. So that's what I learned most.
And I said earlier what I love most about you and what I find so unique about you is that you combine your life stories and philosophies with the technical teachings to help people really learn and internalize the principles that you teach to become successful in business. And I know one of the themes that you have, or the main thing that you is part of your work, is productivity. Can you tell me a little bit about why productivity is your passion?
Well, I believe that everyone is an entrepreneur. The word entrepreneur comes from the French business scholar and economist Jean-Baptiste Say, and it's from entreprendre. And entreprendre is a word combined with two Latin words, entre and pondre. And really the literal definition of entrepreneurship is to undertake something. So a stay-at-home mom is an entrepreneur. An unemployed professional is an entrepreneur. A CEO, a COO, a CFO, a see you later, or whatever, see. They're all entrepreneurs, an attorney, a police officer, a politician, a lobbyist, spiritual leader, a spiritual healer, activist, a massage therapist, a coach, a consultant, a marketing professional, an information marketer, a gardener, an IT professional, an author. They're all entrepreneurs. You're an entrepreneur if you're listening, if you undertake anything. And when you undertake something, for me, you might as well make it productive. You got 86,400 seconds every single day, and that's 168 hours a week. Why not make the most of it? The interesting thing is people don't realize that everyone has the same amount of time. It's what you do with it that counts. So productivity for me is a five-word definition: maximum results in minimum time. And when you get maximum results in minimum time, it leads you to more leverage, which ultimately leads you to more freedom. And you really don't have to be a professional of some kind to become productive. Murray Cohen said the Ark was built by amateurs and the Titanic by experts. So don't wait for the experts. Just do it. So you're an entrepreneur. If you're listening right now, you're an entrepreneur. It's just a matter of what you want to do with that entrepreneurship that counts. And so I've really landed on the whole concept of productivity for the work-at-home entrepreneur. I am what David Allen is, only to the work-at-home entrepreneur, for someone who makes $0 to $3 million a year working from home. And productivity is important to me because the more productive any of my tribe becomes, the more productive I become.
And I think that goes back to what you said earlier about what you truly want is to be happy, and you do have a family with two kids and their young children, and so it's important, I know, because I'm a mom too, to have that balance between your professional and your personal life so that you can maximize your time and truly be happy. And it's a good lesson for our children to be able to see that too.
Well, kids pick up a lot if they're around, and I don't believe that there is a difference between personal and professional anymore. There may have been in the 50s and 60s, but no longer. At any given time, I could be wearing six hats. Like right now, I'm a teacher, but I'm also a friend. I'm your friend, you're my friend. Those are two rules. When my neighbor is waving at me, I'm now a neighbor. I'm wearing that hat. If my wife calls for me, I'm now a husband. If my kids call for me, I'm now a father. If my mother or dad calls for me, I'm now a son. So I have maybe six roles that I could take on within a few seconds. And that makes life complicated. The work-at-home entrepreneur has a lot more complicated life than the one who works from the office. So not because they can't separate, you know, their work from their professional, their personal life from their professional. There is no separation. It's one and the same. You know, you can't separate the sun and the sun ray. You can't separate the heat and, the ability to, burn paper when you shine, have the sun come through a magnifying glass. You know, radiant heat that warms up and, is focused. So in the same vein, I don't think personal and professional life can be separated anymore. I think they're exactly the same. And I think it's a myth if we think they're different. And that's why I believe that everyone better start taking very close notice of what it takes to become an entrepreneur, because you are one, whether you want to believe in it or not.
You always help me see things from a different light. I appreciate that. I do understand that being a stay-at-home entrepreneur is there is a lot more juggling that needs to be done. What advice would you give to those that are stay-at-home entrepreneurs to balance, so that they can wear their hats and not feel like they're maybe taking away from their children, or they're able to really have a balanced life? And I'd love for you to be able to think about that and then be able to answer it after we go come back from a break.
Okay,
thank you.
Does this show resonate with you? Do you have a message you'd like to share on this show? Would you like to be featured on this radio show as a sponsor? If so, contact Pauline directly through her website at www.paulinevictoria.com. And now, back to the show, Commitment to Courage with Pauline Victoria.
Great. We're back here with Alex Mondozian. You can learn more about Alex Mondozian on productivetoday.com. And the question that I had asked Alex before we went to break was how you have a balanced life, especially when you're a stay-at-home entrepreneur.
Well, I'm going to answer that by saying that balance is not something that I strive for, because when you look at a scale and you have two sides to the scale and you have the equal amount of weight on each side, you have perfect balance. When you have perfect balance, what is happening? Nothing. Nothing happens at balance. And so striving for balance, I think, is a mistake. Now, the spirit of what balance means, the ultimate concept I think that people really are insinuating or shooting for, is harmony. And so balance is fluid. It's the scale going back and forth, back and forth. And if I'm giving, let's say, 20% of what I'm capable of to my wife, Amy, and she's giving 80%, then we are now in harmony. We're not in balance, but we're in harmony. And then, let's just say, certain times of the month, if she's giving 20% because that's all she can give, and I'm giving 80% because I have to, stay in harmony with her, then we're in harmony again. And so if you are a work-at-home entrepreneur, now, I've just come back from a two-week stint of speaking on stage, and you can hear my voice. My voice doesn't typically sound this way. I'm a little hoarse, but so my voice is in imbalance, and I don't even know if it's in harmony, but I'm not short of passion. I'm sure everyone can understand me. It may not be as pleasing to listen to is when my voice is 100% there, but it's not preventing me from delivering from what I'm capable of delivering from my heart. And so the ideal scenario at home is to strive, I believe, for harmony and set rules with people that you live with. And one of the rules is prime time. When you're in a prime time scenario, meaning you got to get stuff done to become more productive, let them know. And I don't keep them out of the room. I just put an on-air sign outside, and they know, like, shh. I got two kids, and I got my wife, and they know not to, make a lot of noise, because they know that also, as the I'm the sole, wage earner, that a lot of what they eat and the lives that they live, the quality of life, has a lot to do with them allowing me to do what I'm doing, from the house. So it's not a threat as much as it is an agreement. And it's not even an agreement as much as it is a covenant. A covenant is a sacred agreement. There's no paper that needs to be exchanged. It's a sacred agreement between people and more than one person many times. And so this covenantal agreement that we have doesn't always work. I mean, I'll be honest. If Brianna is excited, she wants to come in and show me her latest art project, I may have 500 people on the telephone line. And she goes, Dad, look, And then what I will do is I will interrupt the call and I will acknowledge her. And, I don't say that and I don't do that to be a great dad. I do that because I wish that my parents had done that when I interrupted them. And, no parent has ever given a user's manual, but my memory's not convenient. I remember what it would have been like, and I would love it if, she could see that I would interrupt what I'm doing because she comes first. And so in a situation where you have covenantal agreements with other people at home. Now, let's say you have pets. They're harder to have agreements with. So, if your dog or your cat jumps up on your lap, then you got to figure that one up, what to do with that later on. But, to actually get productive. But I like to have agreements with people that I live with. And I have prime time hours where there are hours of power every hour that I have a prime time scenario. I set a countdown clock to 50 minutes, which you saw at the reunion. It was the same clock. And
yes.
I do my productivity time, and I do about 3 or 4 of those a day. And some people don't do one in a lifetime. I do 3 or 4 a day. It's not easy. It's hard. But it does work. So if you get your agreements in advance, then there's 3 ways you can treat agreements. You can unmake them, you can keep them, or you can renegotiate them. But you got to do them before the deadline. And so that's what I would recommend anyone doing who works from home. Get everyone who's at home on board with your mission.
Got it. So it's almost doing a dance with them, too.
It's always a dance. Joseph Campbell, who wrote The Power of Myth, in looking at all the mythology, he found that most population or most societies, most civilizations, they don't interact with each other. They don't walk with each other. They don't run with each other. They don't tackle each other. They just dance metaphorically with each other. And they take turns leading. So a little bit, sometimes I lead, sometimes my wife leads. My wife is a very good dancer, so she wants to lead many times. But the guy, is supposed to. So sometimes they even relinquish that control, but not for very long.
Well, that's nice of you. I watched a video. You like you said, you just came back from speaking, and one of the conferences that you were at was Engage Entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned in the video about marrying the mind, heart, and hands.
Yes.
And I wanted to, I thought that was a beautiful metaphor for the mind being the what, the heart being the why, and the hands being the how. Can you tell me a little bit about how you use that construct in your own business?
Yeah, it's really the three H's. It's the head, the heart, and the hand. And the head is about what. It's the vision. Like, okay, what do I want? And the heart is the emotion. So you're thinking with your head. you're feeling with your heart, why do I want it? You know, that amplifies the direction that you're going. It's like putting your foot on the accelerator, and then depending on which way you've turned the steering wheel, you're going. So hands on the steering wheel, that's the head. Foot on the accelerator, that's the heart. And then the hand is actually start working the stick shifter, you know, putting it into drive, and that's actually executing. It's the how. How do you do it? How do you get from point A to point B? And so I have a very dear friend whom you may have met at the reunion in March when you came. His name is Jay Niblick, and he is a huge innovator in this area with assessments, the head, the heart, and the hand. And you know, there are three different types of assessments you can do when relating to these three aspects and constructs. And my favorite one happens to be the heart. I mean, I teach with my heart. I just think it's, you know, I don't mean to. I don't do it on purpose. I just do it. And it feels comfortable, and I love doing it, and the person I become loves it even more when I'm doing it. And it works. I mean, people get me, and if they don't get me, then that's even better because they don't belong, you know, in the room. We don't communicate. It's not right or wrong. It just isn't. And so the critical factor when you connect two hearts is that the learning sticks a lot longer, because emotion, for me, is not only an amplifier, but it's a cementer. It's mortar. It puts the bricks together. The bricks are solid, but the mortar, you know, it starts soft and then it hardens. It's what creates the you know, the brick building or the brick wall. And so for me, the heart is the mortar, and you know, the bricks are the head. And then, you know, laying the bricks is the how you do it. And the why, which is the heart, is about your values. And that's my favorite type of assessment. What are your core values? I recently interviewed Tony Hsieh, and Tony sold the company to Microsoft for $265 million, a Link Exchange, years ago. And now he runs Zappos, which was purchased by Amazon for over $1 billion, deep in the heart of a recession. So, and they sell shoes, or they started that way. So imagine, you know, if you have enough heart and you start with core values, then you have the ability to have a world-class company and a world-class brand, and your culture becomes your brand more than anything else. And anyone who's ever purchased anything from Zappos.com knows that to be true, because their customer service makes Nordstrom look like a thumb-sucking baby when you come in terms of it.
I love that. And it seems to me that there seems to be a trend in business that's moving towards the heart and bringing across the transparency and the authenticity, because I think people are hungry just to be, you know, to be with each other and to be recognized and just have real people doing business with them and creating those relationships. And I know that's one of the things that I think sets you apart from many, many other people, is that you do allow yourself to speak from the heart and allow yourself to be in touch with those emotions and express those emotions and not be apologized for that. And I think that's... I wish more people would take that lead. So thank you for doing that.
Well, it's self-serving, you know, and it's easier. It's self-serving because it's healing, you know, from anything that maybe was misaligned from the past, maybe from childhood. And secondly, I think that, you know, I don't believe that the Mayan calendar in 2012, December, marks the end of the world, or as humanity as we know it. I think it marks the end of an era, and we're shifting into a more feminine era. And you see it. You see it everywhere. You know, social media is a feminine. It's not man-woman. It's a more feminine activity. The call to action in my world is no longer buy now or get this now or add to cart. The call to action is comment and share. Well, that's a feminine construct. You know, it's a gathering construct, as my good friend John Gray would say. It's not about hunting. It's about gathering. It's about nurturing. It's about farming. And it takes longer, but, you know, the crop and the yield is much more, you know, significant. So it does require delayed gratification. And there is pain involved. I mean, heck, women go through labor. And, you know, notwithstanding the 9 months, you know, that prior, I mean, I don't know what labor will ever feel like, but I know what it looks like because I was there twice. And I'm glad I'm a guy, to be frank. So I believe that I think women have taken on just naturally who they are. They've taken on a lot of temporary suffering for the rest of us, and we're born because of that. I mean, labor is right up there with probably not only the most memorable but the most painful, you know, scenarios for most women, at least anyway. And it's about giving life, and the baby is traveling 1 foot, you know, about 8 to 12 inches. That's it. That's the entire journey, and you know, it's very dramatic. And I think it's just poetic what's, you know, possible with the heart, because you can connect with more people in more ways, and you can disqualify more people. People get offended if you lead with the heart, if they don't lead with their heart themselves. And so might as well get rid of them up front. Not that they're bad or good, just there's no reason for them to be there. They don't protect your confidence. They'll be criticizing you. So they're gone, and then you only keep the people who love you or like you or trust you, and or one of the three or all three. And when that happens, then you can really build relationship capital and social equity so that people will support you. I mean, the quality of my life is determined by the quality of my relationships.
Yes, and I love how Maya Angelou always says, you know, that people will forget what you did or what you said, but they'll never forget how you made them feel.
That's right.
Yes, yes. And I can concur that labor is extremely painful, but so worth it in the end. And I know for me it was just that the pain too shall pass, and it's going to be so worth it in the end, which it is, it always is, and every day I'm reminded of that. So I'm grateful for that pain. What inspires you? And I'm going to give you a few seconds to think about what inspires you. We'll go for a break, and then we'll come back with that question or the answer.
Does this show resonate with you? Do you have a message you'd like to share on this show? Would you like to be featured on this radio show as a sponsor? If so, contact Pauline directly through her website at www.paulinevictoria.com. And now, back to the show, Commitment to Courage with Pauline Victoria.
Great. We're back here with Commitment to Courage, and I am joined with my amazing guest, Alex Mondozian. You can learn more about him at his website at productivetoday.com. And before we went to break, I asked Alex, what inspires you? I know you give so much information to us, and it's not just information, it's inspiration. And so I want to know, and I'm sure a lot of people would love to know, what inspires Alex Mondozian?
Well, Albert Einstein said that there are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle, and the other is as though everything is a miracle. And what inspires me are miracles. And to me, miracle is not about magic or alchemy or supernatural. It's about course correction. It's about making mistakes and learning from them. There's three universal principles that Buckminster Fuller, great inventor, friend of Albert Einstein, actually. Albert Einstein said that Bucky Fuller was the only guy who really understood relativity when their paths crossed in at Princeton University back in the day. And Bucky had three universal truths that he used to say, and it's been echoed by many of his students who are friends of mine: Marshall Thurber, Mark Victor Hansen, Blair Singer, Robert Kiyosaki, and many, many others who, you know, learned from him, Bobby DePorter, and so on and so forth. And he said that, you know, we are all born geniuses. That's the first universal law and principle. We're born geniuses. So if that's true, then we're born strong and we just learn to be weak. And it's just what inspires me is when I remember what it means to be strong again. And circling back to, you know, the curiosity of, you know, childhood wonder, which I forget because I became an adult. And then the second universal truth that Bucky says, or used to say, is that mistakes are great. The more mistakes I make, the smarter I get. And so I live by that, because correcting a mistake is, that is a miracle. A course correction, it's in the Course of Miracles. If anyone's read it, it's a spiritual text, but, you know, it's just as, you know, meaningful as a book of allegory and a book of lessons, which is it is. And really, a miracle is just a course correction. You're correcting something that's not working. So mistakes are great. The more mistakes we make, the smarter we get. And then the third universal truth that Bucky used to say is that the only failure in life is the failure to participate. The only failure in life is the failure to participate. And I believe that to be true. What inspires me is to be in the game, not on the sidelines, to wake up. Now, have I ever woken up in fear? Yeah. Have I wondered, hey, how am I going to pay for, you know, all my team members this month? I just had going back about a year and a half, I had just a very surprising poor month in revenue. It was a complete shock. And things happened that I didn't expect and I didn't anticipate. So I had to course correct. And I would wake up many days in that month saying, okay, you know, rather than pulling money out of savings, how am I going to pay for everybody? And, you know, there's a certain feeling of terror that runs through my bloodstream. You know, this show's about courage. Well, courage to me is not absence of fear. Courage is abstinence to fear. It's resistance to fear. It's acknowledging fear and doing it anyway. And doing it intelligently. You know, I could be courageous and jump off a cliff, but you know, that's also stupid if I'm going to be hurled down, you know, 300 feet to my death. So, you know, there's courage, and then there's also, you know, stupidity. If I approach each day with a level of courage where I know I can improve just a little bit, that inspires me. What inspires me is the look on my wife's face, you know, after we've shared a moment during date night. It's the look on Brianna's face, my daughter, when you know, she's showing me some art that she's drawn at school. It's the look on my son's face when he crosses the plate when he's hit a home run in Little League. It's the look on my face when I look in the mirror and I say, wow, look how far we've come. And I always speak in the third person because I have multiple personalities. And so I just feel more comfortable saying we, you know.
So
inspiration to me comes from, you know, different places, but it's an inner knowing, you know. It's not unlike what a lot of the sages and the spiritual texts in the past have taught. But I think the one thing that inspires me the most is something that I know that Harry S. Truman said, one of our presidents of the United States, as well as John Wooden said. He was the winningest coach in basketball, championship coach for UCLA. And they both said, it's what you learn after you know it all that counts most. It's what you learn after you know it all that counts most. So anytime I feel I've known all there is to know about a subject, then I get excited because I know I'm starting to get cocky. And the moment I switch that and learn something different, and it usually comes from an unexpected place. It comes from a student. You know,
and it sounds like you're always in a state of learning because the stories that you share are the littlest stories that most people won't take note of, the moments, like the woman feeding the pigeons, or your daughter saying something amazing, and you taking that moment and really appreciating the miracle that it is in that one moment. And so that's beautiful in itself, and that's a lesson for all of us to learn, is to really appreciate the moments and recognizing them as miracles, and that life isn't just one big episode of victory. It's made up of all these little episodes, and it's just taking the time to notice that and appreciate that.
Well, they're micro decisions. You know, they're defining moments every single day. You make about 300 micro decisions a day, maybe more. You don't even realize it. And, you know, if you're rolling your eyes right now as you're listening to me, if you don't know me, or even if you do know me, and you're saying, well, yeah, sure, you know, it's easy for you, you know, you've made money. I'm hurting right now. I have lost all my savings. I've lost my confidence. I'm not that young, and I feel like I got to start from scratch because the economy, or because my job, or because my job, because my boss, you know. And if that's you, then you have a choice, and you can choose to be the victim, like I chose to be, and it sucked. I mean, talk about debilitating. I was a very, very good victim for 3 years. Poor Alex. I mean, I added no value to anybody. I sucked value from people and things and projects. I was an energy vampire. And you probably know people like that in your life. And it takes one to know one. So I know what that felt like. So I thought, wow, well, maybe I'm a volunteer. Maybe I'll take, you know, 100% responsibility and respond to what happened instead of react. I'm $242,000 in debt. I'm 26 years old. I'm in Pasadena, California. I'm waking up every night, actually every morning at about 2:30 a.m., weeping. I'd say crying, but it doesn't sound as good, so weeping is better. you know, my mom is running to my room and comforting me, and it's the same bed I slept in, you know, as an adolescent, because I'm back home. And so I did that for 3 years, and it sucked. I mean, it wasn't fun, but I was in it. And I chose to make those moments in my life as though nothing was a miracle. And then the moment I made the shift and got inspired, and it started with gratitude and appreciation. Hey, I'm breathing. You know what? I do have family. They don't want to be around me right now because I'm not fun to be around, but they still love me. I have a sister. I have friends, and I need to, you know, reignite those because I haven't been, you know, good to them. And so I started treating everything as if it were a miracle. And believe me, it does not take it. It doesn't happen overnight. That's the second part that sucks. Once you decide, you have to pour it on. Otherwise, it's going to diffuse itself. Sparking a flame is harder than fanning a flame. You know, making fire is hard. If you've ever tried on your own without a flint, it's hard. But once you have the fire, fanning one is easy. So the getting started part is very, very hard. It requires momentum. It requires heat. It requires vigilance and confidence. And so it took some time, you know, to do it. And once I did do it, I kept doing it, maintained momentum. And my goal is never to go back there again because it's not a pleasant place to be.
Yes. So, you know, Bob Proctor also said your greatest power is your ability to choose. And it sounds like you made that choice to go from victim to victor, and it doesn't happen overnight. So for those that may feel like they're at that victim stage and, you know, that's a choice, what would you advise them so they can start moving out of that to start gaining momentum? I know you mentioned gratitude, but is there anything else?
Well, just know that you're making a choice. A habit is, like my good friend T. Harv Eker says, is something that you do or don't do. If you don't do something, that's a habit, the habit of not doing. If you are doing something, that is a habit, that's the habit of doing. And so if you're choosing to be a victim, even if you don't like that word because it's offensive, you know, well, sorry, get over it. You're a victim. If you're a victim, I was a victim. I know what it feels like. You know, it's where you decide not to choose. With victimhood, the way I define it, my experience, and I can only tell you my experience. I don't expect you to believe me, but I believe to be this to be true, whether you want to believe it or not, is that you take the choice out of the scenario when you go into victim. With volunteer, if you go into volunteer mode, you now have a choice, and you have the choice to move and look at things differently. So I started with appreciation and gratitude just to get my heart flowing. And then I stopped keeping score. I stopped doing conditional things like, if I do this, then this will happen. Or I will only do this if this of that will happen. And that's such a bogus approach. It was silly. As if the results are any of my business, you know? They're not. In fact, you have no control over your results. You have control over your thoughts, your feelings, and your actions. But the results are going to be a sum of what the universe or what, you know, spirit or thought force ends up manifesting. And there's a lot of space, you know, between atoms that are circling each other. There's a lot of space between an action and a result and a lot of time. So, like if you go into a business and you say, I'm going into this so that I can make $1 million a year, and you end up making $50,000 a year, the results are none of your business. You know, you did what you had to do. And 50 is better than zero. So I stopped keeping score. I stopped worrying about if I'm getting the right results. And I started looking at progress. Not perfection, but progress. And little by little, it inched up. And eventually, I turned my annual income into a monthly income. And then eventually, it turned into an hourly income. And not every hour, but enough times to make it notable.
So you've already accomplished so much in your life. What's next for you?
I am in the process of a game changer, I believe. In the 1700s, the founding fathers of the United States, you know, came here from parts of England and Europe. And you know who they are. I mean, John Adams, Thomas Jefferson, America's first millionaire, Benjamin Franklin, and many others, George Washington. These were not politicians. These were humans. If you read their stories, they were very, very human beings. I mean, their background, you know, isn't pristine. They're humans. You know, they fell from grace just like anyone else does. But they were entrepreneurs. They were here to become more productive and build a country based on entrepreneurship versus politics, which, you know, England seemed to be at the time. So they were not in session for Senate as often as they are now because they're tending their farms. They were entrepreneurs, and they came and they did that for about a year, 100 years, 1700s. And then in the late 1800s, we had a migration from Europe, and most of them came through Ellis Island, and they were entrepreneurs coming from Ireland, coming from parts of Eastern Europe and the Mediterranean area, and the Italians, the French, you know, the Spanish, you name it, they were coming. And they did, and a lot of them migrated to Manhattan and New York, and they're still there. Many of them migrated in other parts of the country, but they were entrepreneurs. And then around the early 1900s, we sold out because, and I only say we sold out because we opted for security. Alfred P. Sloan started the concept of the corporation with General Motors. And for the next 100 years, it seemed to work. You know, with this whole industrial era, it became political, though, because now the CEO was not considered an entrepreneur. He was considered like a politician. And he or she, mostly he back then, would determine your fate. He could fire you. He could keep you. And as time went on, people were not, people were not staying on their jobs as long because they were getting let go. And job changing and vocations were switching more and more often to the point where people change so often that now they're entrepreneurs. And the corporation, I believe, is slowly decaying. The concept of the corporation, it lasted 100 years, it worked, but no more, you know, 1910 to about 2010. And companies like Enron and other scandals that have happened, people like Bernie Madoff and others who have had absolute power that have, you know, corrupted them absolutely, have shown that there is not equality in a hierarchical corporate structure, and there is no flat organization. I mean, that's BS. Come on. Entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Entrepreneurship is the flat organization. It's social, and that's how the third world is developed through entrepreneurship, and that's where we are today. We are at the highest and most educated level of unemployed ever in the history of the United States. These are not opportunity seekers. These people have been laid off. These people either are broke or have money, but they're educated. They have execution intelligence, and they are hungry and starving to learn how to make money for themselves because they don't know how to do that. They know how to make money for others. And so the three pillars of wealth, real estate being one, that doesn't work anymore because lending isn't where it used to be in the 1980s and 1990s. And stock market, that's not where it used to be. You have to have highly specialized knowledge. And the third pillar, business, that's hard unless you have a franchise. Most businesses go out of business in less than 2 years, except for the Internet. Lowest risk, highest impact. And I have shied away from teaching newbies, but I don't mind teaching newbies who are technologically challenged, like me, a techno dummy, but they want to be millionaires. I'm a techno dummy millionaire. And so I love teaching them, and I am in the midst of a launch called the Ultimate Internet Bootcamp with my good friend T. Harbecker, and we have gone into partnership together to teach entrepreneurs in a 5-day intensive live right there how to build a business and put them in the position to turn pro at the end of the 5 days. You know, make at least $1, which is a miracle, really, and then eventually make 100K in an hour a day. 100K a year, working 1 hour a day, 365 hours a year, making 100K. Now, I do that, more than that, with some of my businesses. So if you have three websites and they're making $100 each at $300 a day, you're there. So how much time does it take to do the ka-ching and, you know, bring those orders in and do a little bit of a help desk work? Well, an hour. So that's the goal. And long-term and short-term, that is the game changer. And I hope to have, you know, Wi-Fi buses with the team that teaches it, going from city to city and liberating cities as people get to plug in to the rest of the world, knowing what they're going to sell, stemming from their passion and core values, ultimately to teaching them how to sell, utilizing the tools and techniques and strategies that I've learned over the years. So that's the future for me, the Ultimate Internet Bootcamp. And our company that we started is called clickandbefree.com. It's pretty cool. I'm very excited about it. And it's ready, fire, aim at this point.
Can you repeat that website one more time?
It's clickandbefree.com. And that's our name of our company, actually. It's a strategy if you've ever wanted to get free promotion. Our LLC, Limited Liability Corporation, is clickandbefree.com. It's not click and be free. It's clickandbefree.com, LLC. So if Larry King ever interviewed me, or Harv, they say, hey, we have T. R. Becker and Alex Bondosian, and they're from clickandbefree.com, LLC, and welcome, gentlemen. And boom, you've just smuggled your name in front of the TV audience.
Thank you so much. I have no doubt you'll be on Larry King one day.
I can't wait. Very soon here.
As we wrap up, I want to thank you so much for everything that you're doing in your business as the father of your family and as someone that I look up to and would like to call a mentor. So thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you being able to take the time. I know it's late in California, earlier in Hawaii, to be with me for this time. And again, I would encourage our listeners to learn more about Alex Mondozian at ProductiveToday.com. He is an excellent teacher and mentor. With that, is there anything else you'd like to conclude with?
Yeah, I would. Only those who risk going too far can possibly find out how far they can go. T.S. Eliot said that. I'll repeat it. Only those, that's you if you're listening, who risk going too far, that's T-O-O, can possibly find out how far they can go. Just reach beyond your grasp and see what happens. And the worst thing that can happen is, you know, you hit the moon instead of the stars, which is better than hitting the roof if you're shooting for the moon. So the ideal scene is to have the courage to go beyond what you feel you deserve as well as what you think you can do. And I say that for me as much as I say that for you, because I need to hear it just as much. So I hope our paths cross again. And, you know, Pauline, you know that you're a source of my inspiration, not only when I see you physically, but when I see what you're doing with this show. And you embody courage as a mom, as a wife, and as a thought leader. So I'll do everything I can to support you in accelerating that path.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And funny that you mentioned that. I'm actually, I did apply for the OWN TV for Oprah Winfrey's network video submission. So I'm excited to see where that goes because, like you, I want to really have a life that's in harmony without having to sacrifice my being a mother and a wife as well. So I believe that would be a beautiful outlet for me to expand myself, to spread the message, and also, you know, be who I am in all parts of my life. So
yeah, I hope you did it the same way we practiced when we first met. That would be really cool to see that on video.
Yes, I would love for you to check it out at voteforpauline.com. We have it specifically there. And vote if you feel inspired to, and share that with your friends. I'd be truly honored.
Vote twice.
Yes, actually, you can vote multiple times a day.
Awesome.
So.
All right, I'm in. I'll have my kids voting. They'll love that.
Awesome. Thank you, Gabriel and Brianna and Amy, in advance. So.
All right, you got it.
All right, so thank you so much, Alex, and we will be talking very soon.
Yep.
Until then, I wish my listeners a blessed day, and to tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, and 4 p.m. Eastern. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Commitment to Courage. To learn more about Pauline Victoria, visit www.paulinevictoria.com and sign up to receive free updates. Be sure to tune in every Monday at 10 a.m. Hawaii Standard Time, 1 p.m. Pacific, and 4 p.m. Eastern. And remember, as you continue to live your life and as you listen in each Monday, know that you always have the courage within you to live a life of victory.